Good evening. And welcome again to another Sunday evening in Or Natan tonight. As you can see, the screen is ready. It's going to be an exciting evening. And this lecture, from experience of over 10 years, I can tell you that it's the most desirable lecture that people like it the most, because it's interesting. And the topic tonight is life after life, or life after death, depending how you want to call it. Scientific proof for the existence of the soul after the death. The lecture is not only about life after life, it's also about reincarnation, which is a transfer of a soul from one body to another. We're going to talk about that. Hypnosa, that means hypnotizing people and able to bring them back in history. That means it's called regression. That means we are able, through hypnosa, to travel back in the time of a person, until sometimes it's possible even to go to his previous life. We're going to see some about that. And just in the end of the lecture, Bezrat Hashem, if we're going to have some time left, I'm going to show you a 10-minute movie about an actual person, non-Jew, that remembers his previous life. This is another symptom. This is another thing that few people in the world, in every country, there's approximately few people that are able to remember in details their previous life in a different body. Another thing, if we have time, we will talk about, it's something that's called dibuk. Dibuk means it's a non-welcome visitor entering your body, chas v'shalom. It wasn't invited. And now when he's in, you're really not interested to have him in you, but he doesn't ask permission. He just takes control on your body and starts fighting. That means two souls living in one body, which is similar to two captains trying to fly one plane. And each one wants to go to the opposite direction. Sometimes they both have a mutual direction. They okay that the plane, that means the body, will go to one place. But what happens when each one of them wants to go to a different place? That's called a dibuk. You know, it's like a Siamic twin. You know, they have one body and two heads. And they talk between them. You know, on one side of the shoulder there's one head. And on the other side there's another head. And they move the head. So there's two souls, because the soul living inside the head. When you know there's a head, you know there's a soul. And inside the brain, that's where the soul lives. That's where the soul, the source of the soul is right in the brain. And that's why people that have brain damage, they have a soul in the body, but it's disconnected from the body. It's only connected in a very, very little way. It's not really a real connection. And that's why the Down syndrome and autistic, even though they have a soul living inside their body, they can't really function. That's another thing to mention later. It reminds me that the Gemara says that in the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, which I told you once was the president of Israel, and people came to ask him questions. He was the head rabbi. He wrote the Mishnah, the Oral Torah, the foundation of the Gemara. It's the Mishnayot. He wrote it. And what happened is, one time there was another rabbi. His name was Shlomo. He was also a genius, a holy rabbi, approximately 2,000 years ago. And he came to him. And he asked him, Rebbe, someone who has a Siamic twin, on which head he puts the tefillin on? He has only one left arm, one hand, and two heads. What tefillin you make him? Do you make him one pair for the hand and two for the head, or it's enough that he takes one at a time, he put on the hand on one head, and then move it from the head to the other, and it's considered like two people to put tefillin? So he thought he makes fun of him. And he told him, get out of here. And I'm making a decree now. He had the power. He was the most important person in the world at that time. And he told him, I make a decree that you go out of Eretz Israel to the exile. You can't stay here. That means he isolated him. 5 minutes later, a person knocked on his door and came, and he told him, Rabbi, I just had a son, Lo Aleinu, is a Siamic twins, and he has two heads. 5 minutes later, and I want to know how many coins I have to give to the Kohen to make Pidyon HaBen. You have to redeem the firstborn, because every firstborn belongs to the Kohen, according to Torah, also animals, not only human beings. Therefore, when you have a firstborn, if it's the first baby that comes out of this woman, if she had a miscarriage before or something like that, an abortion, Lo Aleinu, then it's not the firstborn, the second or the third. But if it's the first one that comes out of the womb, that means you have to redeem it from the Kohen. You have to give the Kohen 5 silver coins, which worth about $50, $70 if you buy those 5 coins. You give it to the Kohen and you say, I'm redeeming my son with this money. And the Kohen takes it instead of the kid. And the holiness of the Kohen stays by him, but it doesn't belong to the Kohen anymore. The holiness of the firstborn, he has it, but this redemption releases him from that. That means it becomes yours. So he came to him and said, now how many coins I have to give to the Kohen? 5, as usual, or 10? What is it, 1 man or 2 men? He asked him. And now he understood that Shlomo came to ask him that question. Hashem prepared him. He should have thought, oh, if you ask me this question, obviously it's a very hard question. I have to learn. He prepared him for that question, which reminds me that this exact lecture, one time I was invited to a house to give this lecture. And there was supposed to be a lot of people over there. Based on the promises that I got, I was expecting a lot of people. But when I got there, it was mamash unbelievable coincidence here, coincidence there. You know, there's no coincidence, but this couple couldn't come, this group didn't come, that guy missed his plane, all kinds of things. In the end, I think there were 13, 14 people only. It was a very small lecture. But since I got there, I had to prepare it. And the next day, I had this lecture in front of over 200 people. And the lecture wasn't ready. I forgot that a while back, I was upgrading the lecture, and I left it open, not ready. And I didn't know. And then God sent me to that place to know inside, in front of only 12, 13 people, that I'm actually not ready. Imagine if I wouldn't go there that night, I would come in front of a lot of people and start the lecture and press the button. It goes to different things. It's half open, half erased. Big thing. Sometimes you prepare in advance. It happens. It's very common. Before someone comes to ask you a question, if you deal with the public as a rabbi or someone who answers questions, many times there is a preparation before the big questions come. You go somewhere, you hear it, or you find someone put a tape, you listen to it, the next day someone comes and asks you this question. Why? Because the interest of God is that the people who the public needs their help will be always ready for them. So we're going to start. The way this lecture is designed is, first we're going to prove everything scientifically. And then, the answer, you go to the Gemara and you see what the answer is. So, the truth is, when you have two heads, it's two souls, it's two people. Two people. So, the lecture is designed in a way that first we prove scientifically, based on the Goyim scientists, or some of them are Jews, but based on the scientific world, that they already came to a complete conclusion, without any doubt, and you're going to see how, that there's life after life. Nobody really dies. It's just a visit in this material world, and it's going to continue. How is it going to continue? That's another question, but it's definitely no death. The death is only the body. The body is disposable. It's like using a stereophone cup. You use it once or twice and you get rid of it. And you get a different cup. That's the way it's working. And the body is only the box. We're going to see. Before we get into the fantastic world, we will start with the Torah. We received the Torah over 3,315 years ago. And in the Torah, there is few places the Torah addressed the issue about body and soul, which is a combination of two things, the material thing and the spiritual thing. And the Torah clearly, inside the book of God, which we know that was given by Hashem, this book clearly indicates that life and death depends on only one action, one thing. If the soul is in the body, there is life. If the soul gets out of the body, that's considered death. Where do we see it? When we read the story about Yaakov Avinu, Jacob with Rachel and Rachel, that they go on the way and she dies, and he has to bury her in Bethlehem. Nable. Over there, the Torah says one sentence, Vatetze nefesh Rachel, Vatamot Rachel. The soul of Rachel came out of the body, and then she died. Two things, the soul came out, and only after that, second after, that's what we call death. Okay? In the beginning of the Torah, when the Torah describes the creation of the world, the creation of the world, we have some room here if you want, three rooms. You can come from, just watch the wire, watch the wire, watch the wire. Yeah, no problem, no problem. Good. Okay. That's what, where's David? David, I told you you need more shells. Baruch Hashem. So in the beginning of the Torah, when the Torah described the creation of the world, we have 6 days, and in a 6 day it's a special day because Adam was born. Adam was created, actually, I should say. And once he was created, that's the beginning of life, of human life. And this is the way the Torah described it. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min Adamah, and God created Adam, earth, from the ground, sand from the ground. Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, and he blowed into his nostril a living soul. That means, imagine you have a little doll that you made on a beach. It looks like a man. You make it perfect, and now you come into the nostrils and you blow some air in it, and he becomes awake, and he starts to walk, and he starts to talk, and so forth and so on. Right here, the Oral Torah addressed this issue, and the Oral Torah says, Man de nafach midelek nafach. The one who blew the soul, where did he get that soul from? What does it mean to blow? It's the same thing that a human being is blowing air into a balloon, and the air stays there forever, and it's going to fly here and there, and it's always going to be because he blew the air in, and the air is what makes him go around, or fly, or whatever. The same thing when Hashem, when God blew the soul into the body of a human being, that spiritual thing that was blown into a body, which was we call neshama, a soul, came directly from the one who we call God. That means it's a very important thing, it's a spiritual thing which we call chelek Eloah mimal, a part, a direct spiritual part from the creator of the world. That was Adam. Later, this Adam, he was the main soul, and the soul started to have sparks, started to separate. Now we have to understand one thing. When you divide something material, so let's say you have 1 feet by 1 feet, you want to divide it, you have half a feet, right? And then you divide it again, so you have a quarter of a feet. And then you divide it again, and you have an eighth of a feet. The more you divide it, until you get to something you can't divide anymore. Because this is physical. Physical, it takes room and space. This is the way it is. But when you divide something spiritual, even a billion times, you do not lower the size of that thing, because that thing doesn't really have a size to begin with. It's something, it's hard to understand, because everything we understand in our life is physical. But when it comes to something spiritual, try to imagine that you have a wave or something, and you try to split it or cut it to pieces. It's really hard to understand, but it cannot be divided. Therefore, it can be divided spiritually, but it still doesn't mean that it's going to be smaller and smaller. Just for you to understand, when it comes to reincarnation, some of the reincarnations are done in animals and in flies and in bugs. Take the smallest bug, which you can hardly see in the air, a soul of a 500-pound man can fit inside that bug. Why? Because a soul doesn't really take any room. Exactly, this is the point I'm making. A person can be reincarnated in any animal, the smallest or the biggest. It doesn't really matter. Therefore, don't make that mistake and think that we are talking about something physical here. So the beginning, the Torah describes God created Adam, sent from the earth, and right after that, he blows the soul, a living soul, into his nostrils. But now, I just want to remind you, for those who came late, as many people coming in as we speak, before I'm entering the scientific proof, which comes from science, a few slides will be from the Torah, and then we start. One other thing. We have 613 mitzvot in our Torah. Exactly 613. I mentioned it before. The reason we have 613 is the body of a human being is designed in 613 parts. 248 parts, 365 ligaments. For each mitzvah in the Torah, each positive order that we have in the Torah, we have one part in our image. For each negative mitzvah, such as you should, any restriction, you should not kill, you should not steal, you should not lie, you should not, you should not, you should not. Every restriction, every you should not connects to a ligament in our image. 365 ligaments in a body, that's why there are 365 restrictions in the Torah. 248 parts, that's why there's 248 positive mitzvot in the Torah. The way the Torah is designed, that each order, negative or positive, connects to one part of the body. And the Holy Arizal, 500 years ago, he lived in Eretz Israel, and he say, right before the trial of a person after he passed away and he comes up there to God, before the trial begins, by looking at his spiritual image, in a spiritual view, with spiritual eyes, you can see which parts are sanctified and which parts are impure. Based on his image, if you look at his spiritual image, each part and each ligament in the soul, it's similar to the parts of the body. What does it mean? I'll give you an example. Let's say you with your body stand right next to the lake. There's a lake and you see yourself by the lake. In the lake, you see yourself for real. You see colors, you see everything. But it's not really real. You touch it, you feel different things. You touch your body, you feel body. You touch the water, you feel water. That's the difference between the spiritual image to the physical image. They look exactly the same. The difference is, you have nothing to feel. Therefore, if I want to feel myself, it hurts. I feel something. But if I wanted to feel someone so right, standing right here, or fly here in the air, I go like this until tomorrow, he smiles. He doesn't feel the patches, right? There's nothing to really hit. The only time there is pain or there is noise is when two objects collide. And that means resistance. And the resistance creates noise. That's what happens when an F-16 plane flies in the air and it goes over 1 Mach speed, which is 1,200 kilometers an hour. That means it goes faster than the sound of voice. That means the wave that he creates around him, a circle, he breaks it. And that's when you hear an explosion. When you hear a thunder, two clouds collide one into the other, it creates fire and it creates noise, it creates a lot of problems. Why? Because they collide. Even though it's only steam, this is only clouds, once they hit one another, they create noise because this is all physical. But once it's spiritual, there's no noise, there's no feeling, there's no nothing. The Torah dedicated few of the mitzvot from the 613 mitzvot that we have from that list to this issue about communicating with dead people. The Torah, the Divine Torah, tell us in few different places in the Torah. order number one, you should not, לא ימצא בך שואל או וידעוני ודורש של המתים. There is few different ways to communicate with the dead. Remember, the Torah is over 3,300 years ago, so the language the Torah uses is different one the scientists use. But they're really talking about exactly the same thing, just with different terms. When the Torah called Ma'ale Ba'ov, there's a way to communicate with the dead. That's what we call seance. When the Torah says Adoni, we call it medium, but it's the same thing. There's ways of communicating with the dead. We see how we do it today. But there's one thing we should ask right away, even if it's the first time we read this book. When we read in a book that two or three of the mitzvot of the Torah tells me, do not talk to dead people. What do I understand right away? Before the scientific world came and revealed all these ways to communicate. It's possible. I know if the book of God tells me, if Hashem, if God bothered to write in his Torah, do not ask questions from the dead, do not communicate with the dead, that means it's possible. How is it possible? That's a different story. But it's possible. Because if it wouldn't be possible, he wouldn't waste 3-4 lines in the Torah about it. Now I ask myself a question. If I see a dead body laying on the floor, I tell him, hey, get up. Hey, Chris, get up. Ahmed, get up. He doesn't move. You step on his nose, he doesn't move. You pinch him, he doesn't move. So, tell me something, how's the weather up there? He doesn't talk. Do I need the Torah to tell me do not talk to the dead? Everyone knows you talk to the dead, you'll be in a mental house. You don't need Torah for that. You have to understand, a lot of the things in the Torah, if you really try to understand it the way it sounds, you have a very serious problem. What happened?
You have a very serious problem. Actually not that serious.
Don't worry. Once you're connected, it's all working. Yes, that's how it's working. That's why you sit here. Now you understand why you chose to sit here. Now, the Torah tells you, I'll give you just one example. The Torah says, someone who cooks on Shabbat, in Friday, will have what to eat on Shabbat. Just push it in. You don't have it. You can't. No, that's the problem. Now you got the problem. Someone who cooks on Friday will have what to eat on Shabbat. Thank you very much. Let's glide to the Torah. Beautiful. Without the Torah, I wouldn't know that if I don't make a chulent on Friday, I don't have what to eat tomorrow. For that, you don't need Torah. For that, Hashem brought us to Mount Sinai and made all this noise to tell me that if I cook on Friday, I have what to eat on Shabbat. What's the secret here? The world, the physical world, is equal to the 6 days of the creation. For each day in the creation, there's 1,000 years in this physical world. Sunday, it's 1,000 years. Monday, it's 1,000. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, each day is 1,000 years. We are close to the end of Friday now. We are in the 6,000, in the last quarter of the 6,000. That means 23 quarters are behind us. We're right in the last quarter, 15 years in it already. Each quarter is 250 years. We are 15 years into the last quarter. And the Torah tells you, someone who bothered to prepare what to take with him into the 7,000, which is the spiritual day, the Shabbat, the seventh day. And the seventh day got struck and he did not create anything. It's a spiritual day. Someone who prepared what to eat over there, that's what the Mishnah says, אלה מצוות שאדם עושה אותם אוכל מפירותיהם בעולם הזה וקרן קיימת לו לעולם הבא. This is what the Mishnah says. This mitzvot that you eat from the crumbs, from the fruits in this world, but the actual solid tree is waiting for you in the world to come. That's when you're really going to catch your reward. And they start giving you a list of mitzvot that you can enjoy from the reward already a little bit here. So, based on that, what do you see? That the actual reward is waiting over there. And this is what the Torah says. If you cook on Friday, that means before the world is ending, before we're going to finish the test, which is maximum year 6,000, that's where the world will be finished. Then will come the 7,000, 1,000 years, from 6 to 7,000, it's 1,000 years. This is after Mashiach come, after the resurrection of the dead. All the righteous people from the previous generation will come back in a body for 1,000 years. with no sicknesses, no work, no subway, no 9-to-5, no health insurance, no doctors, no lawyers, none of this headache. Forget about it. Rambam writes in the last page of his book, in the time of Mashiach, the world will behave the same, except one thing. Money, wealth, will be like picking up sand from the ground. That's how it's going to be, easy. You're never going to have to worry about one financial issue. Never. Nothing. It's going to be history. And that's 1,000 years, we're going to come to the level of Adam before the sin, which was supposed to live in a pleasure, great pleasure, until he made that sin. And then after the 7,000, this material world will be destroyed permanently, forever, and the bodies will die again, but this time forever, and the souls will go to a place which we call Olam Haba, the next world, forever and ever, and the story is finished. No more elevating, no more downgrading, no more Kaddish, nothing will have the soul. The soul is there forever and ever, based on the level of who you are. This is what the Torah tells you. If you cook on Friday, you have what to eat on Shabbat. You did no preparation, you come there, you're empty, you're hungry. There's nothing to feed you over there. You're dead. You're spiritually dead. That's the secret here. And the Torah says, do not talk to the dead. Thank you very much. If the Torah told us that, that means it's possible. In the book of Job, it says, God, you made me an outfit. What is my outfit? My outfit is skin and meat and bones and ligaments. That's my outfit. That means who am I? Something else. I'm not the body. Every time the Torah wants to refer to a person, to his body, the Torah is very precise to call him Ve'al Besaro, Basar, Besar Adam, Besaro, 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 his meat, his skin, his body. The Torah refers to the body in a different term. When God wants to speak about who you are, that means the body, he doesn't call you you. He calls you the body of you, your body, your meat, your Besarcha, Besaro, Besaro. Every time he say, smear some oil on the body, it says, smear it on the meat of the body. If he says, wants to do something to the king, you have to spill oil on his head, the Torah says, Mashach oto berosho, right on the body. The real person is not the body. The body is only the cover. Then another way, in the book of Isaiah, Chizkiah, Yeshaya, this is what it says, Min ha'adam asher neshama be'apo, from the human being that has a soul in his nostrils, inside. A soul inside his head. Genesis and Kohelet, the beginning of life and the end of life in this planet. How does it work? Pay attention. 3 steps in the process of creating life and 3 steps in death. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min ha'adamah. And God created Adam, sent from the earth. He blows into his nostril a living soul. Vayi Adam lenefesh chaya. After the soul enters, he started to move and he became alive and he was able to talk. King Solomon, in the book of Kohelet, which is a part of the 24 books of the Bible, the Torah is only 5 books. Bereshit, Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. And then there's 19 more books, which is the prophets, the kings. This is what we call Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. And one of the last books of the Bible, it's the book of King Solomon. Obviously, he wrote it with God's inspiration and the Ruach HaKodesh. And this is how he described death. Pay attention. Vayashov ha'afar el ha'aretz kesheaya, and the sand will return to the earth as it was before. Ve'aruach, and the spirit will return to God, which he gave it. So we have a reverse transaction now. The body, the sand, the body will go back to the earth. The spirit will get out of the body. And it will go where? To the same God who actually put it there. It's not going with the body into the sand, into the grave. Only the body goes to the grave. But the spirit, which is really the human being, goes up there to God. Why does it need to go back to God? We'll see later. Now we are starting. This is what the Gemara says in Masechet Kiddushin. This is the Oral Torah. Tanu Rabbanan. There's a Mishnah there. Shlosha shutafim en ba'adam. There are three partners in a human being. Three partners. God, his mother, and his father. The Gemara continue in that area to describe which parts of the body comes thanks to the mother, which parts of the body comes thanks to the father, and after the body is created from the merge of the man and the woman together, when the body is ready to come out, that God, that master, decides from all the existing souls that are waiting to come for another chance to this world, he decides which one feeds this house. Maybe this guy wants to come down, he says, you cannot come to this house. Your test is different. Yeah. And he chooses. And he puts it in the soul, and that's their main thing. The body is nothing. The body, God could have created the body himself. He wanted the father and the mother to participate in the creation, to create the box. After the box is being created, he put the human being in the box, which is us. That's what we do here. And this is what the Gemara in Masechet Nida, in a different page, this is what it says. How the fetus is looking inside his mother womb. It looks like a little notebook that is folded in a circle. It's folded with his knees up, and his elbows touching his knees. This is like a bean. Did you see how a bean looks? Look at the bean. This is how he looks inside. And there's a candle lighting above his head, and he's able to watch from one side of the world to the other side of the world, spiritually. Spiritual image. Spiritual view. And there's an angel that comes and teaches him the whole Torah from A to Z. Believe me, it's not easy. It's a lot. From A to Z, once the time for him to come out to the air of the world, to start meeting with environment, with the oxygen, an angel comes and hits him on his nose, under his nose, on his lip, on the top lip, and makes him forget all the Torah from A to Z, and then he comes out to the world and his test in life, as the main mitzvah in Judaism, is to learn as much Torah as possible. The more Torah he learns, the better grade he's going to get in the end. And it has to be hard, and it has to be against the evil inclination that fights against it all the time. It has to be difficult, you have to understand, you have to repeat it, you're going to forget it, you have to remember again, you come to yeshiva, you learn, you come to lectures, it's very hard. And based on the effort, that's how your reward is going to be. The more effort you put into the religious life, the more effort you're going to have, the more reward you're going to get over there. The less you do, you have nothing. You come not prepared, you'll be starving. This is the time to tell you an unbelievable story. There is a person that is still alive in Israel. By now he's over 50 years old. And when he was born, it was a shock in the world. Not that it's a surprise, because we know the Torah is the word of God, but finally we had the chance to see it. As he was 1 or 2 years old, he was walking in the house and telling all the Gemara, all the Shulchan Aruch, all the Chumash, everything from A to Z. Little kid. A kid doesn't even know how to say mother, father. Walking around with his hair, you know, before they even cut his hair. Everything he knows. Something happened, the angel didn't make him forget the Torah. He was walking until age 5 or 6, if I'm not mistaken. They didn't know what to do with him. And they took him to the Rebbe from Belz or Tzanz, one of them, the Admor, the Rebbe, the Hasidic Rebbe. And he got him into the room and he said, stay outside. And after a few minutes, he came out and he forgot all the Torah. He made him forget all the Torah. I was wondering, why did he do it? That would be the end, that's it. Bring him, put him in the media. So once I asked someone, he told me it would not survive, it would die from Ayin Hara. But that's not really the answer. You know what the real answer? Why God made it? Why did the Rebbe so to do it? Because today, we have a lot of disagreements in the Jewish law between the rabbis. Because the Torah was given 70% finished, and the rest got put in the hand of the Chachamim, that those who know and learn Torah all their life, they designed Judaism based on each generation. Each generation needs different decrees. Some generations are more pure, more modest. So they don't need such strict laws. Some generations are not modest. There's terrible tragedies in families, cheating, this, that. So the rabbis have to be more strict. That's why the God put the Torah in the hand of the rabbis. So obviously, when human beings learning something, there's all kinds of different opinions. And they wrote books. And some of the books contradict. He argue with him. No, this is not allowed. This is allowed. You should do it that way. No, you should do it that way. This way is not kosher. This way is kosher. If he starts to talk more and more and he's going to be famous, that puts a lot of people in big embarrassment. Why? Because the truth will come out. And the time is not arrived yet. Why? The only time that we will know the final pure truth of God is when Mashiach comes. This is what the Gemara, every time the Gemara has an equal argument, the Gemara finished the argument with one word, teiko. Teiko, that means even argument, teiko. Even in Hebrew, in a soccer game, they use this term, teiko, 1-1, 2-2, even. That's it, no winner. And the teiko means, it's abbreviation of Tishbi et aret kushiyot vebayot. Eliyahu HaNavi calls Tishbi, when he comes before Mashiach. Few days before Mashiach comes, Eliyahu HaNavi will come to blow the shofar in the world. And then when he comes, finally all the questions and all the mysteries that we're living with, finally we'll get the answer. And that's only when Mashiach comes, not before. Not a day before. Just when Mashiach comes, the time will come. So this is, that's what we call Tishbi et aret kushiyot vebayot. So at least, this person is still alive in Israel, and there are thousands of witnesses that saw that. At least we had an opportunity to see a baby that came already ready. Remember all the Torah and talking words or pages from the Torah, from the Chumash, left, right, everything by heart. The best part, that someone that knew him and learned with him in yeshiva, it was in the 20s, he told me, you know what, not only that he knew all the Torah, he knew even books of rabbis in our generation, the Chazon Ish, at least 20 years ago. He was saying pages from his book. What do you see from that? Rabbis in our generation that wrote books about the Torah, about the Gemara, their books is an integral part of the Torah up there. That's how important you can be, your Talmid Chacham. Now you understand why it's such an important mitzvah to respect someone as a big Talmid Chacham. The Arizal, the Rebbe of Rabbi Chaim Vital, 500 years ago, he was an unbelievable Kabbalist in Tzfat. Rabbi Chaim Vital is buried in Syria. About a few years ago, the Kabbalists from Israel got permission to go to Syria, even though it's an enemy country, to go to his grave to pray over there. Rabbi Chaim Vital. And this is what he writes, 500 years ago. The body of the human being, it's not the real human being. This is the meat of the human being, the skin. The real human being is the internal part. The body is only the outfit. The outfit that surrounds the spiritual, brilliant soul, that this is the real human being. And after his death, he's going to get rid of this outfit, which we call the body, and will be put in a different outfit up there. What is this outfit? It's a spiritual, pure outfit that we call Chalukah de Rabbanan. It's a spiritual clothes, not physical clothes. And this is what, over there, they're going to make a special outfit to put the soul up there in a different outfit, but not physical outfit. And the same way that parts of the human body, when they go to a tailor and he design a suit and he measure how you need real clothes to wear, this is how God made the body as an outfit to the soul. And so forth and so on. And once the soul gets out of the body, all the feeling and the senses are eliminated. You can't use them. And this is what it means when the soul is in and the soul is out. That's what we call life and death. Now we are going to see about scientific researches that were done that proving what we want to know, if there's really life after death. The first one, it's out-of-body experience. People were able to come back to life. The body was dead completely, and they were able to come back to life. We'll see what it means. Seance, communication, that's what the Americans call Ouija board. It's a little bit more professional than what you buy in a store, the Ouija board, but it's very similar. You take a cardboard, and you write all the Hebrew or the English alphabet, depending on your language, and you write yes or no in one circle, and you put the 9 digits, the number from 10 digits, from 0 to 9, and you put it, and you light candles, and you begin, and you put a cup, you take a glass cup, you put it upside down on the board, and you wait silent, and you begin to call someone you want to communicate. Just before, I hope it's not going to become an instruction how to do it, because according to the Torah, this is a big warning what I'm giving you. It's a big sin to do it, very big sin. To bring a soul from the upper world into this physical world through that, it's one of those 3 sins that I just read before, that from the 613 sins, 3 of them refer to us never to dare to do it. What happens to someone who does it? Die very young, doesn't live long life. Not only that, if you do it chas v'shalom inside your house, then you're going to see after a few weeks that the wallpapers are ripped, things are breaking in the house, peeling, all kinds of weird things happening in the house. Very, very weird, very weird feeling. If you buy a house from a new construction, nobody lived there, it was a forest, and you buy a house and you move in, don't dare to leave there one night before you put mezuzot and you make Hanukkah bite. If you buy an existing house, somebody else lives there, it's no problem. You can move there and then put mezuzot and then do Hanukkah bite because someone lives there. If you move into a brand new house, that means nobody was there, there was never mezuzot there, and they build that new construction. When they build new construction, where all these spirits and demons and all these spiritual things which we're going to see soon, likes to go and live over there. That's what the Gemara says. They like to find a place and be in those places. And that's what the purpose of mezuzah. Once you put mezuzah, shin daled yud, it means shomer daltot Israel. It's the guard of the doors of Israel. You put the mezuzah by the door, kosher mezuzah, strict kosher mezuzah, then none of them have permission to enter the house. Once they come there, they see they can enter. If you don't have mezuzot or you have non-kosher mezuzot, they can come free. Especially if it's new construction, they were there before you even moved there. You didn't get rid of them. That's why we do Hanukkah bite. We make an evening, we bring 10 people, Shomer Shabbos, and we read all kinds of parts, some from the Zohar, some from the Gemara, parts that connect to a house when you move into a new house, and we get rid of them. Also, if it's in a house that people worship idols over there, if you buy a house from Korean, Japanese, Indian, Chinese, Thailandese, all these kind of people, it's also very bad. Why? Because there's a lot of bad spirits in houses like this. And so forth and so on, you know, obviously. So that's not really the topic, but just that you know. One of the ways to communicate with them is throughout the board. And once you call a person, you call Moshe Ben Yitzchak, which could be your grandfather, you begin to talk. After a few minutes, you see, you ask him, are you here? No answer. You ask again. After a few minutes, the cup begins to move. I myself, when I was in elementary school, I think I was in 8th grade, when in Israel they used to make all kinds of experiments, you know, in a time of war, that you have to go to shelters for a few hours. You know, they make a siren in school, and then they measure how long you go to the shelter. And, you know, when you go to the shelter, it's dark, there's no light over there, it's under the ground. And you sit there for hours, what do? So somebody made an idea, I say, my parents do this, let's do it. And he got a piece of carbon paper, he started to take a cup, make circles, he writes. They got candles, they put it together, and the cup begins to move. It's a very, very common thing, unfortunately, as sad as it is. It's been done almost every day and every hour in Israel, in the army, in kibbutzim, in places, people speaking to dead people day and night, all the time. So that's how they communicate with them, and they get answers. And you ask the person, now sometime a different soul comes to the seance, not the one you call, a different one, it can be even a goy, a goya. And one of the seance in the army, they were calling a Jewish person and a goya that buried hundreds of years in Ramat HaGolan, in a mountain of the Golan Heights in Israel. She came into the seance in front of 12 soldiers and she said, I want to kill Chaim. Chaim was one of the people there. And they told her, who are you? She told them her name. She's a Christian Arab woman that buried there for hundreds of years already. And she said, and they say, why you want to kill him? Well, he doesn't know you. What did he do to you? He said, when he was on the way to Lebanon, he went with his command car, the tank, the jeep, right on my grave. And it got me very upset. So they told her, we ask forgiveness, please forgive us. And they turned the light on, and then the soul leaves. Sometimes in the middle of seance, the window breaks. That's a common thing. And the most interesting things about this, and this is a non-professional way to communicate with the dead. Soon we're going to see there's ways that are much more professional. Sometimes in the middle of seance, something unbelievable happens. Three questions you should never ask in a seance. One is about God. One is about Mashiach. And one is about the resurrection of the dead. When you ask those three questions, the glass explodes to thousands of pieces. Nobody touches it. Boom, it explodes. You should know that sometimes in the middle of seance, people died in the middle of seance. It happens not once and not twice. In the middle of seance, the people that participated got killed. As a very famous seance, two very, very famous seances in Israel in the last 20 years. One was done to a writer of songs, songwriter, very famous. His name is Chaim Nachman Bialik. The streets in Israel based on his name, Rehov Bialik, Bialik, for those who were in Israel, you know who I'm talking about. In the middle of a seminar, Ran Rabbi said that two people told him that they made a seance to Chaim Nachman Bialik, and he told them that he's Chas V'Shalom, that was a long time ago, I hope he's not there anymore, and he told them that he's in a very bad place that's called Kafa Kela. Kafa Kela, it's a place that is much, much worse than hell. Much worse. Much worse. And the soul is flying in a space of the air and suffering. It doesn't have a moment of rest. And they ask him, what is this? And he explained them what happened to him. And he said, for how long are you going to be there? He said, for 51 years. And they told him, why 51 years? And he said, for every time I cheated on my wife, I got 1 year in this place. 1 year. For each time I cheated on my wife. Not even talking about his other sins. For his other sins, he still has to go to hell. Then after a few years, the rabbi was talking in a seminar and telling this story like I'm telling you this story tonight. And two people from the crowd say, what is this nonsense? Let's go up and do right now seance and call Bialik and see if it's nonsense or not. They went up to the hotel and they made the seance and they put the glass and everything they needed. And they called him up and they said, the rabbi is right except one problem. Tell him, finally, this year I came out of Kafa Kela and I finally enter hell. It was exactly 51 years after his death. When those two went, tell him, I already came out. Last time I was still there. Now I'm out of there. There's another very famous seance of the Prime Minister of Israel, the most famous one, Ben-Gurion. Remember, all these seances that I'm telling you, it's not religious people. Religious people will never dare to do such a thing. It's like try to murder someone. They won't do it. People that have no idea what they do, and they call souls, they play with them. And one of the most famous seance, also in the army, people from Kibbutz Deboker, that's when Ben-Gurion lived in the end of his life. Most of his life he was in Tel Aviv, in Ben Yehuda there. He has a house until there, it's a museum. And then to the end of his life, he went to the south, to the Negev, to the desert, and he built himself a house in Sde Boker, it's a kibbutz, and that's where he lived. And two people from that kibbutz, also, they made seance to Ben-Gurion. And in the middle of seance, he got very angry at one of them, and he started to fight with them. The cup was running like crazy, and then they realized that they're really getting him very upset, and they turned the light on. because they were afraid that something will happen. And one of them went into the bathroom, and he came to the bathroom, and in the water of the bathroom, he saw his face looking at him from the face. And he fainted. The person fainted, and they came there, what happened, and he saw what happened. This is very dangerous. Those things are not a joke. People should know that. And once you play with that, chas v'shalom, either you die young or damages can happen. This is, now remember, this is not professional. This is not a professional way. No scientist using these techniques. That's for the ordinary people that wants to do it. The next way to communicate with death is through a medium. What's a medium? A medium, there are people among us, I met some of that in my life, some people like this, that have a very, very high ability to go into trance. What trance means? Complete concentration. They fall into like almost fainting. You come into a place. I hope it's not Ben Gurion calling that. Anyway. It's such a dangerous business. Oh, now it's Bialik. Bialik now. Okay. Now it's the opportunity to shut the cell phone. We have an interesting, shocking night. Don't ruin it, please. Now let's continue. One way to communicate is through what? Middlemen. We need a broker. Not everyone can be a broker. Some people that have the ability to go into a complete trance, they are able to communicate between you and a dead person. For instance, you go to a place, a person, and he put a dot on a wall, and he tells you, stare at the dot for 15 minutes, and after 15 minutes you feel like you're fainting, if you have this ability. Not everyone can do it. Some people, after 15 minutes, nothing happened to them. But some people, and the person who is in charge of it, he sees that the person is in trance, and he begins to tell him, I want to speak to Moshe Ben Yitzchak. I want to ask him some questions. And they wait and wait, and after a few seconds, he says, Moshe Ben Yitzchak is here. And you begin to ask questions, and the soul that stands above that person, which is in trance, giving information and tell you things that you used to do together. We'll see some of the experiments the scientists did. This is another, that's called medium. There's another way to do it. It's to go to a, that's what the Rambam writes in his book, 850 years ago, that a person goes to a cemetery at night and he sleeps on the graves over there, and he has the ability to communicate with dead people. He sees and a dead spirit comes, and that's called one of these things the Torah forbid us to do, and is able to communicate with dead images. There was one Arab Bedouin in Be'er Sheva, in the south of Israel, and the way it is over there, that you can go to this person, and you want to speak to a dead person that you know. It can be 50 years dead, it doesn't matter. And you go to that Bedouin, and you take a bone of a human body. He take a bone that he took from a body of a dead person, and he put it under your arm. And he tell you, hold it with your arm like this, and he take a big sack, like a potato bag sack, the canvas one, and he put it on the head. And he tells you, I'm not guaranteed to anything. It's not my responsibility. Whatever you tell me, I do for you. I'm only communicating for you. And then you sit inside the sack. You see, the sack is on the head, and you wait. It's not always working, sometimes it does, sometimes not, but it's enough that it works once to see that it's real. And you put the bone, and then he calls the person you want to speak to. And after a few minutes, if it's working, the person comes and you see inside the sack an image of that person that you used to know before he died. And you're able to talk to him, communicate with him, right there. That's called medium. This is all ways that's called yadoni, kishuf. There's all kinds of ways to do it. The Torah obviously spoke about it. And now we're going to see how the scientists are doing it today. They have a sophisticated way to do it. This is another way to do it. Another way to prove life after life, it's called regression. You go to a person, a parapsychologist, that knows how to make hypnosis. hypnotize people. He hypnotized the person, and when the person is hypnotized, they begin to talk to his soul directly, not through the body. The body is eliminated. And they tell him, how old are you, sir? And he say, I'm 70 years old. And they say, let's go when you were 50 years old. Where are you in 1981? Tell me, in the month of January 12, 1981, there was something in the world, let's say. Tell him, where are you right now? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Can you tell me where you are? And this person is 7 years old. He begins to talk live, like he's 20 years before. And he says, I'm walking in the street in Tel Aviv. I'm crossing the street now. There's a big truck here. Move. He begins to talk. It's real life. You see it, and they film it on video. And then they say, okay, let's go back when you were 13 years old. Where are you? Oh, I'm in Russia now. They're making me bar mitzvah, but there's no Sefer Torah in the shul. He begins to talk. You may call him in a moment that he was in the middle of crying, and he begins to cry. And the best part is when you get him to age 1 or 2, when he's a baby, you can see an old person. He crawls on the floor, goes down from the chair, and he begins to crawl on the floor, an old person, and they film it. And he begins to cry like a baby. And you see from his throat a voice of a baby is coming out. Just before he spoke like an old man, a minute ago, and right now he's on the ground and he speaks like a baby completely. And he speaks in English. Now, the best part is that sometimes you're able to talk to him before he came to the world. Where was he? Let's say he's 70 years old and he was born in 1934. And you tell him, where are you in 1931 in March? Tell us where you are. And what happened? That's really shocking. I once saw a video like this. A woman that in her previous life she was a man. And from her throat, a voice of a man came out in a different language. And when she came back, when they released her from the hypnosa, she didn't remember anything what happened in the last hour, obviously. And they told her, we know who you were in your previous life. And they show her the video. And in the video she sees from her throat, her mouth moving, and a voice of a man is coming out. And she said, what is he saying? I don't understand the language. Speak German or Russian or anything. You know where you were in your previous life. And one of the famous seance, it was in 1946. They spoke to a woman here. And this woman started to speak in Yiddish. And they ask her where you are, and she say, I'm standing moments before my death. I'm in a line, and there's Nazi soldiers shooting and killing the people. And she was screaming and moving, like it's really happening. And then, in the middle of seance, all of a sudden she say, oh, she got killed. But she's alive now, and they filmed it. It's very famous things. There are many videos about it. There's things in the internet to watch. And the best part is there's a way to even get regression yourself. There are people who do that. You go there and they move you back into your previous life. And they do it mainly to take care of psychological problems. One of the ways to cure all kinds of problems is to know where the problem comes from. And sometimes the problem comes from previous life. For instance, There was a man that was eating non-stop. He couldn't stop eating. No matter what they're trying to do, he has to eat all the time. And they took him to a treatment with hypnosa, and they started to go day after, many, many sessions. They go day by day, they go back. They finish all his life. They got to zero. And then they had to go to his previous life. And what happened? Just when they started his previous life, what happened to this man? He was describing that he's on a boat and they took a lot of bags of flowers. Remember, people used to make their own bread in previous generation. And they're on a boat and they have bags of rice and bags of flour, and the boat hit ice in the ocean, and water came into the room and made all the dough and everything wet and got everything spoiled, and he died out of starvation. In his previous life, this person, they were recognized. So now, how do they correct the problem? They tell him, don't worry, nothing really happened to you. They convince him. They go into that day in his previous life, and they begin to talk to him, this parapsychologist, until they convince him that he's okay. And then they bring him back to life, and now he's okay. he doesn't eat anymore, he has no problem, and so forth and so on. There's many, many ways to do it. There's a woman in Broadway, 97th Street, which she sent me some emails. I met her in a lecture like this in Hadassah organization. If you want her information, I can send you there. She does it in a different way. She holds one muscle in the body, and she asks questions to a person, and throughout the way their body behaves, it's yes or no. The way the muscle shrink, it's yes, or if it's not, it's no, and that's how she knows. And she begins to talk, and the body reflex answers yes or no, and sometimes she finds that the problem is in previous life. Same thing, just different way, without hypnosis. Just one thing you make sure, when you go to a person to hypnotize you, you make sure you see a certificate that he knows how to bring you back to life. Imagine you stay there like this. Alright, let's go, let's move on. According to science, what's really considered death? What do we consider death? A person that is hard for him to breathe? A person that is fainted? A person that is sleeping? What is it really death according to science? This is what we need in order for us to sign the death certificate of a person. This is what we need to see. Number one is the body, the heart stop beating, no heartbeat. Condition number one. Condition number two, no waves in the brain, completely. It's connected to those machines in the hospital, no waves in the brain. Third condition, the cells in the brain that get the oxygen do not receive oxygen anymore from the lungs, from the system of the breath. They don't get any oxygen anymore. Right after that, moments after, the body's temperature begins to drop. And the fifth condition is that there is no feeling. You pinch the person, you burn him, or you do anything, and he's not responding. That means the nerve system stops to work. Five conditions in order for us to know that it's a scientific death. How long it has to be? More than 5 minutes. If there is none of those five conditions more than 5 minutes, that means we can find the death certificate of the person as a dead person, covering with a blanket and go. It's not allowed to put them in a fridge yet, in a refrigerator. Why? Because they know for every rule there's an exception to the rule, and this is what we're going to talk about. But it's considered a dead person, according to science. Some of the most famous parapsychologists in the world wrote many books about life after life and out-of-body experience. None of them, according to the names, you can see none of them is Jewish. And they are the most famous scientists today in the world in this field. The most famous out of all of them is right in front of you. This is his face. His name is Dr. Raymond Moody. He is a doctor to psychiatry in the University of Virginia. He interviewed 150 people that died and came back to life. The conclusions to his researches he wrote in his books, which he calls them Life After Life, and the book was translated to 30 languages, including to Hebrew. He has sites in the internet, very famous. You can get into his researches, and he describes all the interviews that he made with people that died and came back to life. The psychologist Carlos Ossis from the American Union, Psychology Union, he interviewed 877 doctors that testified about the experience of people who died and came back to life. And he made a book and many, many articles about what he found. Dr. Kenneth Ring, a psychology professor from Connecticut University, 2 years. He was following 102 cases of clinical death, and he published a book, The Life and the Death. Dr. George Ricci, the president of the Richmond Medical Academy and the head of the psychiatrist section in Towers Hospital. He wrote a book, The Return from the Tomorrow. Another very famous one, Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross from Detroit, a world-known psychiatrist. For 20 years, she checked over 1,000 cases of people who died and came back to life, and she published a book some books and many articles about it. We're going to see soon their conclusion and based on what they based their conclusion. Dr. Maurice Rowling, cardiologist from Tennessee University, 300 people, and he published a book about it. Dr. Fred Schoonmaker, cardiologist, a head cardiologist from Denver Hospital, over 1,000 cases. How many people really experience out-of-body experience? How many? According to the Gallup, that, you know, they make surveys in the United States, they check about clinical death, and they found that 8 million Americans in the United States return to life after clinical death. Remember, clinical death, that means there was 5 symptoms that I mentioned before, 5 conditions. The body stopped to function, no communication between the person and you for more than 5 minutes, and they were able to return back to normal life. We'll see how is it possible. In the world, it's been estimated 30 million people that had death and they were able to return back to life. Obviously, there's some billions that died and didn't return. This is the exception to the rule, 30 million. Okay? And the most amazing thing that all of them return, all of them repeat the same experiences that they had while they were considered dead completely. The people describing the elements that they had while they were out of the body. And this is what comes in all the stories, the same element. One is the soul is flying above the body. When a person was just dead right now after an accident, or he got electrocuted, or heart attack, or whatever the case is, the first thing when he comes back to life, he's able to tell you that he was flying above the incident. All of them, with no exception, are describing how they were actually above what's going on. Above the car, above the ambulance, above the doctor, about everything. And then right after that, the souls enter a dark tunnel. And right after they enter the tunnel, they see in the end of this tunnel a huge light. It's a spiritual light image with endless love. This is the way they describe it. The light begins to talk to them. And it's not the same way that we talk. The way that the communication were done is through telepathy. Throughout thinking. You think and the light pass thoughts to you, and this is the way it is. It's not done throughout regular talking. They saw their relatives and friends that passed away welcoming them. And they saw all their life in pictures, fast pictures, snaps, one after the other, very bright and clear pictures that started from the beginning of their life to that moment that they died. Everything from A to Z, they reviewed their whole life. Remember, most of the proofs that I'm going to show you, it's 99.9% non-Jewish people. So don't think it's a conspiracy, the rabbis made it up, they designed a beautiful thing. It has nothing to do with the religious world. It's 99.9% from Christians, from Muslims, from Hindus, from all kinds of people. And based on that, we are going to see if our Torah spoke about it 2,000, 3,000 years ago or not. And then you'll be shocked. You'll see that. Just patience. All of them, with no exception, were able to see and to hear everything that happened around the incident. Some of them talked in details about what happened in a surgery table. Some of them describe what happened in the crash car, inside, screws, what happened to the engine, inside, under, above, things that no dead person has time to pay attention to. Yeah? The doctors don't understand how these people were able to describe this kind of meaningless details when nobody really cares about them when the time that they have such a tragedy. According to the rules of medical, with no breath and no radio wave, no radio wave. I was right up there.
Oh, took it out.
I was right above. I saw how they work on my body. I saw how they connect the shocks to my chest. I saw my body is jumping from the electric. At that moment, I dropped down heavily, right into my body. That's one person that while they were giving the electric shocks to the chest, she was above, and all of a sudden she was like vacuum in, back into the body. And interesting, a lot of them, when they asked them, how did you enter back into your body, they say through the nose. That's how the soul enters the body. I knew I'm dying, but I couldn't do anything about it. Nobody helped me. I came out of my body. I have no doubt about it. I saw my body in a surgery room. I heard the doctors giving up on me. I felt terrible. I didn't want to die. Another person. I was out of my body, but I knew clearly that I have two options, either to stay out of the body or maybe to return. All the deaf people spoke about a dark cave that their soul entered when they came out of the body. They felt that they're flying in a long, dark cave, and they heard a ring, a voice, like bells in the ears. They heard a noise as they're flying inside that tunnel. This is the way one person described it. I felt I'm flying in a dark valley. The darkness was complete. I couldn't see anything, even though it was a great feeling to fly. For those who wanted to be a pilot, here you have a chance at least. You know, one woman came to the class for parents, a teacher conference, and the teacher told her, Mrs. Leibovitz, I have very bad news. Your son is an astronaut. He's not in the class even 1 hour. She said, ah, thank God. I always had a dream my son would be an astronaut. So, it was a complete darkness, complete silence, no fear. I found myself in a tunnel with mutual circles. I felt like I'm flying in those circles right in the middle. I was another person. I was out of my body. I have no doubt. It made me feel very bad in the beginning, but then I saw that bright light. It was blurry in the beginning, and then it was brighter and brighter. It was huge amount of light, nothing similar to any projector in this world. And I felt the warmness of that light. I felt perfect. It didn't disturb me and didn't disturb my attention. I was still able to see everything that happened in the physical world. The surgery room, the doctor, the nurses, everyone. Another person. It was a huge light, bright, spiritual, a love that I never felt in this life. I felt communication to that light. It was full of pleasure and mercy. When I was there with this light, I felt so good. I didn't want to come back. That light had such a great personality, so warm and so good, which I didn't want to leave it. Other people say that they felt that there is a line. And once you cross that line, it's between you and the light. You know you don't return. As long as you didn't cross it, it's clear to you that you have a chance to return. Once you cross it, it's obvious that you don't come back. There's another person. All of a sudden I saw light. And then it became stronger, huge. It's hard to describe. It surrounded me from all over. But I wasn't blinded by it. I saw the surgery room. The light asked me, are you ready to die? I felt like I'm speaking to a person, but it wasn't a human being. It was the light that spoke to me, that communicated with me. I knew that the light knows that I don't want to die, but I had a feeling that I'm being tested. I felt so good and confidence and love. It's hard to describe. I can't describe. All those people, they say that relatives came, some of them, not all of them, some of them came and said that relatives and friends that died already came to welcome them, to show them the way in a way, and follow them. and they started to pay attention to all kinds of friends that died. They're making some kind of communication with them. Not with words, telepathy. Some of them welcomed them with blessings. They were all people I knew in my life, and they passed away. I saw my grandmother. I saw a girl that I knew from school. I saw their face clearly. I felt they're very close to me. I felt many of my relatives and friends flying in a room with me, like they come to welcome me. I saw my friend in my brain, not in my physical body, but I saw his image. I saw fingers, I saw things, but it wasn't real. One amazing story about this. One goy, little boy, died. And he came back to life after a few minutes. And when he came back to life, his parents, you know, were excited. He woke up in a hospital. And he told them, Mommy, Daddy, who is this girl that I spoke to? And they said, which girl? She said, my sister. She came and she said that she loves me and she's my sister. So they started to cry, these two goyim. And they told them, why are you crying? And they said, before you came to life, before you were born, you had a sister that died from that disease, and we didn't want to upset you. So we didn't want you to know about it. So he was there. As he died, he went to this experience that I was just describing, and one of the relatives that came to speak to him was his sister that he didn't even know who she is. She came and told him, I'm your sister. And he came back to life and he told them about that. I was here. I saw all of them testified that they saw a movie about their life, one picture after the other, very fast, in a chronological order, completely bright and clear. Some of them say that even irrelevant details were in those pictures. They put the highlight on every detail of the picture on the story of each day and day. Some of them were able to get huge amount of information. The light, that spiritual image, told them to think about the value of their life and show them key moments of their life until today, like a general picture of their life. One person, this is his word, I was very embarrassed from many things I saw. They showed me what I did wrong. I thought to myself, I wish I wouldn't do those things. I wish I can come back and correct. I felt terrible disappointment that I did not achieve even one thing in my life. I did not achieve nothing. I didn't know anything. I did not complete one thing in my life. This is, by the way, the words of Chazal. This is the Ramchal in Mesilat Yesharim. And this is the Goy. A Peugeot car came and flipped over. The gas tank exploded. I lost my conscience. The next thing I saw, I'm flying inside a hospital in Be'er Sheva. This is an Israeli one. Flying in Be'er Sheva that I never knew the hospital before. But now I know everything about that hospital. I know where the rentgen's room. I know all the other sections. I felt the feeling and the sense about time and space. I saw everything at the same time. Like I'm in all the rooms and all the places at the same second. I saw myself laying on a bed, and the next thing I was there. My attention, I paid attention what's going on in the surgery room and other rooms. And I found myself there. And then describe how the other rooms look, exactly, in perfect way. Then my attention went to a shoe in the third floor in a building by the window. And all of a sudden I was there. I was there flying by the third floor outside of the building. And I thought there was a tennis shoe. Someone left inside the hospital in the third floor by the window. He left a tennis shoe by the window. And now remember, she's dead in an emergency room, in the first floor in a hospital. And now she comes back to life and she's saying the third floor, in that side, there is a tennis shoe right by the window. It looks green and white, and she described the shoe. And they go up to the hospital and they come to that room and they see that shoe right there. How can she give information? She's here in a hospital. The body is right here. Can I tell you now what happened in a building in the seventh floor? You can't say it's a dream because you don't get this kind of information in the dreams when you sleep. There's no other way to explain it. The body was right here. Where you were you able to give information about all kinds of rumors in the hospital when you will witness that you were here all that time, that 5-6 minutes? And even if you left the room and come back in 5 minutes, you wouldn't be able to see so many rooms in the hospital in 5 minutes. There's no way in the world. And I leave you the choice to think, what does it mean that a person is dead in the first floor and he tells you what happened in the third or the fifth floor in the hospital? Then she continued and she said, I was in front of a tennis shoe right by the stair, and she described the shoe. Another person, we don't have that much time, so I'm going to have to skip. Oh, Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross, this is what she writes. People that lost parts of their body, a person without a hand, a person with no feet, this is what they described. Pay attention. They told me that when they left their body as souls, when they were out of the body, they felt complete again. They saw themselves complete. Complete spiritual image with feet. You should know one thing. If you ever see a person with only one hand, you should know right there that from here, the place that he lost his arm, there's another spiritual hand coming out. Just the physical was cut, but the spiritual stay right there. The spiritual image is right there. And that's what she meant. Better than that, this is the best. Pay attention. Blind people, that some of them never saw colors before, and now when they were dead and came back to life, they were able to describe everything in color, even though they never saw one color in their life. What do we learn from that? Two things. One is that definitely the death of the body is not the death of the soul. That's for sure. But we learn something even better. That the previous life. Because where did she know color from? Where did she learn the term? In this life she never saw what blue is. She never saw white. She never saw yellow. And all of a sudden she dies. And she comes back and she says, the doctor wear white, this one wear black, this one has something on his head. Yeah? Right or no? Where does she know color from? Now, once they recognize the color, it comes from the previous life. They know the terms. It's amazing. Some of them, let's say, they knew colors, and they got blinded eventually. And once they got blinded, now they know color. So when they died, they came back to life, and they were able to describe what's happened in a room, books, chairs, pictures, colors. What does it say? Because they know, because they became blind at age 20, and now they died for 5 minutes, so that means the soul came out of the body. The soul is not limited. It's only limited once it's in the body, because the blindness comes from the blind, from the eyes. The eyes is a pipe. The soul sees without the body. The soul doesn't need the body. Just the view of the soul is through two holes, which is the eyes. You close it, you block the soul. The soul comes out of the body. You can block the box as much as you want. It's out of the box already. You understand the concept? In one of the seances, pay attention to this story. There was a bunch of people, and they were calling somebody. And in the middle of the seance, the cup was moving, and a person came. And he told them, do me a favor. What's the favor? Call this telephone number and tell the woman those two words, blue butterfly. And they asked him, what is this? He said, just do it. Call this number and tell the woman blue butterfly. So no problem, just leave us now alone. They took the number down. They call up this woman and they tell her, hello, yes, we have a message for you. Yeah, what's the message? Blue butterfly. What happened? She screams on the other line and faints. They say, hello, what's going on? Nothing. Then an hour later they called. What's going on? We just called you before. We say blue butterfly. You fainted. What happened? She said, I can't believe it. Where did you get this? So they say, we were doing this and this, and a soul came to us and told us this. And said, this was the agreement that I made with my husband before he passed away, that if there is life after life and there's a way to communicate, This cannot be the word, the magic word. Blue butterfly, that means there is life after life. If it's a different world, then we know it's not that. And he came through the seance, he was in the Kafakela flying, and he was able to come to the seance and give them the information. Blue butterfly. How did he die, that person? He was working in a chemical factory and at age 40 he was burned and died. And he was able to come and give her this information. So far, before we go into the next one, this is what it is. Final conclusion of the scientific world after they review all these cases. And remember, when a person is laying down on the floor or in a bed in a hospital, he cannot tell you what happened above the ceiling. If a person dies right here, can he tell us what's happening above the fluorescent light? Which wire is disconnected? If he is able to tell us, and later when he comes back to life, he tells us how the surgery was done and what did the doctor cut and what did the doctor do. It leaves us only with one option, not two. But the person actually went out of his body and is able to fly. Now we're going into the next move. Let's speak some Torah about those things. The Gemara in Masechet Pesachim, over 2,000 years ago, this was said, it was written about 2,000 years ago, this is the story. Rav Yosef became ill, the son of Rabbi Yoshua, and he died. His parcha rucho, his soul left his body. When he came back to life, his father asked him, what did you see in the world of truth? He told him, I saw everything is opposite. An opposite world. Those who I thought should be up there, they're already all the way in the bottom. And those I thought that should be in the bottom, they're all the way in the top. He told him, no, no, you didn't see anything opposite. You saw a clear world. That's the way it should be. And this is what he says. I heard also an announcement up there, he told him. Remember, this is 2,000 years ago. What? How lucky is a person who comes with Torah in his hand? That means he has Torah, he learned Torah. This was 2,000 years ago. The Gemara speaks about someone who died and came back to life. That's what we call clinical death. The Zohar, Kabbalah. Right in the Zohar, this is what it says, a story about Rav Krospadai. They thought he died. And then he came back to life. And he was giving details about the elevation of his soul to the upper world. And the trial that he had until he was able to come back. He was giving details about the trial that he had. By the way, one thing I didn't mention to you. There are some people from all these millions of, 30 million people, that actually started with a trial. Some of them. There's one famous one in Israel. His name is Avi Hajani. His story was learned in all the hospitals in the world as an unbelievable miracle. He was stabbed. He was stabbed with a kitchen knife in his heart, three big holes in his heart. His parents live in the first floor in Israel. His father heard that he screamed in the last moments of his life. They ran and took him to the hospital. And when they got to the hospital, there was one doctor, a cardiologist, that living. And he goes like this with his briefcase and he sees that all the heart is full of blood. And right away he ripped his shirt, he saw holes in the body, and they went into the emergency room and they started to try to save him, and he died. 47 minutes he was dead, completely. No pulse, no feelings, the body became completely cold. They covered him with a blanket, and then he came back to life. He moved the blanket with his head, and he started to talk. Twice it happened to him, not once. In the first time, pay attention what happened. First, in the first time that he came back to life, he described how his father and the neighbor took him all the way from the house to the Bellinson Hospital in Petah Tikva, from Pardes Katz to Petah Tikva, where they went against the traffic, they went on the sidewalk, which red light they went through. He gave them everything in details, and he said, I was right in the ceiling of the car flying with you. I was inside the car. As the body is flying, I was flying with you. with the car, inside the car, my soul. Then, what happened over there, Eric? The people get tired or it's too hot here? Or the lecture is boring? One of the three. Ah, they need to smoke. Tell them smoking, just get them faster over there. Not good. Every cigarette, you erase 11 minutes from your life, scientific. 7 years in general. 11 minutes. Every cigarette, 11 minutes. Scientifically, it takes an average 7 years of the life of a person, cigarette. It doesn't pay to start. No, the Torah says not to smoke. The Torah says you're not allowed to hurt your body. A part of the Torah is when Nishmartem Me'od Lenafshotechem. Huh? I also saw rabbis that stole. I also see rabbis that lie all the time. It doesn't make the Torah not legit, but there are rabbis that smoke. The Torah said not to smoke. The Torah said not to live any kinds of dangerous life. You have to take care of your body. That's it. Okay, can we go on? Thank you. We got the permission to go. Cut. You know, I should do cut next time. Anyway, so Avi Khajani said that he saw the light and the light told him for the first time of his life. Nobody ever called him Avi, ever. Nobody ever called him Avraham until this moment. In Israel, when your name is Avraham, everyone call you Avi. Or if you're lucky once in your life, if the teacher wants to call your real name, he doesn't know how to say Avraham. He say Avram. Either way, it's not Avraham. Yeah, once in your life, you don't hear Avraham. All of a sudden, he died. And he comes back to the trial. And he saw the light, and this is what he hears. He made a big audio tape about it. A shocking audio tape. Really shocking one. And this is what he heard. Avraham, echo, big noise. It's an unbelievable noise. You can't believe such a noise. And he said, for the first time he heard someone call him Avraham. By Hashem, there's no Avi. It's Avraham. Avraham, what do you do? And then he started to cry. He said, please, I have a wife, children. And God told him, everyone has a wife and children. It's not an excuse. That's what he says in the tape. Told him everyone. So what? Nobody will die because they have a wife. Some should die only because they have a wife. They don't give them enough jewelry, you know? I'm not talking about life insurance behind the scene, you know? Yeah. Anyway, bottom line is, after this and this and that, he got a chance. He said, you're going to go back. His time is not arrived. And he started to put tefillin. Thank you, Avi Khajani, after such a thing, is willing to put tefillin and keep Shabbat. Thank you very much. And after 3 months, you know how the evil inclination works. Slowly, he forget. He was a criminal. He was a gangster, you know. He was selling drugs, all kinds of things. This is the way he describes himself. As a gangster from Pardes Kat. Pardes Kat is the city of all the gangsters in Israel. You know, it's like, anyway, not everyone there is a gangster, but a lot of gangsters live there. So anyway, then he stopped again. Then after a few years, pay attention to the patience God has. He was working in buildings. He found a job in a building. And, you know, before they finished the building in Israel, they don't have rails yet. So he was walking inside, and he didn't pay attention, and he slid and he fell. And there was a big pile of sand. You know, they bring beach sand, and that's how they mix it with a machine, and they make bricks. So there was a big pile, and he fell on his stomach. Right on that, and he hit his stomach, boom, and he died right away. This time, second time, they say, you let us down. We gave you the opportunity, and you didn't take it. And then he started to cry again. Nothing helped. He started to go over his life and asking him questions. And then what happened? In the last minute, he screamed, Ani achzor betshuva. I'm going to make complete tshuva. And this is what he says in his step. Once I say tshuva, that was the last word on the trial. I heard tshuva, va, va, all of a sudden I opened. I went right back into my body and I opened my head. Then he went to yeshiva, second chance. But Avi Chajani is one out of billion. Nobody gets two chances. Most of us won't get even one chance. That's it. Life and death, it's over, finished. What are you going to do then? You beg, you cry. Everyone jump over there. Please, God, I have a wife. I'm in the middle of the stack. I have positions open. I got to say, keep me another hour, then I make another $100. So, now let's see what the Torah speaks about those things. The tunnel, right? They speak about tunnel, these goyim and the Jews. When the soul leaves this material world, this is the Zohar in Parashat Vayechi, the Kabbalah. It's going up in a cave that we know as Me'arat HaMachpelah. This is the cave that Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov buried over there, in Hebron. The soul enters over there. That's the entrance to Olam Haba. Shesham Petach Gan Eden. This is the path to the world to come. All 3 days after the death of a person, his soul flies above the body and thinking, maybe I will return to the body. This is Gemara in the Masechet in Yerushalmi. The Gemara, the Yerushalmi in Talmud. All 3 days after the death, the soul flies above the body. In Gemara in Yevamot, Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud. All 7 days, and now you understand why we sit Shiva, where this tradition came from, all of a sudden to sit 7 days in the house of the dead person. Where does it come from? It had to start somewhere. This is where it starts. When God told us the secret about life and death, we know that the first 7 days are very important. That's why we sit in the house on the floor. Kol Shivat Hayamim. The soul, all 7 days, the soul's going back and forth between the house and the grave. Between the house where the people sit Shiva, right to the cemetery and come back. Cemetery and come back. There's no problem. Traffic, no traffic, lights, snow. You can go back and forth. Now it's the chance of the deceased person to see who counts the millions and who really regret that he died. Sometimes when you come to a Shiva house, you see one person smiling, happy, he's thinking, oh, another 3 days, the lawyer will give me a call. And somebody crying. You know, in the old days, it used to be like this. The room of the women, everyone was crying. The room of the men, everyone was dancing. Why? They inherit, according to the Torah, they get the money. The women, not only they don't get the money, they have to cook, they have to do everything now. So there were two rooms, the happy ones and the sad ones. So the Torah says 7 days. He sees exactly what happened. So you know, Chas v'Shalom, when one of your relatives, the close relative, will pass away, don't make mistakes because he is going to be above you for the first 7 days and see exactly what's happening. You understand? Now we understand who really say Kaddish, who really helps him. That's the only time you can really pay back to your parents. Because they don't really need that much from you in this world. Yeah, they manage with or without you. Over there, only you can help them. That's it. There's nobody can help a dead person unless if his sons or his daughters do mitzvot for him, mishnayot, kaddish, pay for someone to say kaddish, or whatever. That's the only help you can give them. Other than that, there's nothing else you can do. Then, what about that light? Did the Torah know about the light? Rabbi Dosa says, that's Midrash Rabbah, 1800 years ago. Rabbi Dosa says, Hare hu omer, ki lo irani ha-adam v'chai. Hashem says in the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu in last week's parasha, not yesterday, a week ago, no human being can see me and stay alive. And this is what it says in the Midrash, in the Oral Torah. In their life they cannot see God, but in the time of the dead they do. Everyone has to see. Where does it say it? Lefanav ichreu kol yordei afar. Everyone who goes down to earth, bow down with his knees down before God. Lefanav ichreu kol yordei afar. The soul doesn't have anything painful more than leaving the body. The sorrow and the pain that the person has of getting rid of his body It's tremendous. And a person cannot die completely until he sees the light of God. And when he sees the light of God, out of his desire to be close to that light, his soul comes to welcome the Shekhinah, the Spirit of God, and that's what we call death. That he stays there and he cannot come back. At that time, he talks about the light. At that time, when the time arrives for a person to die, his soul comes out of the body. Before that, he sees the Spirit of Hashem, the Shekhinah. And out of happiness to see that light, it comes out of the body. If he's a righteous person, he gets permission to stick to this light. If he's not righteous, the light disappears eventually. And then he's mourned about his situation. He left both from both ways. From the body he got rid, and the light left him alone. At the time of the death, a person gets permission to see things he didn't see in his life. In his life, he didn't get permission to see it. In his death, he gets permission to see it. The world to come, the next world, is very wide. No walls around, no edges, no borders, no physical limitations. No tent. Only huge light. That nothing in this world will be similar to this light. This is like word by word of what these people are describing. Pay attention, this was written most of it 2,000 years and older. And the time when a righteous person passed away, God come and tells these righteous people. He tells all the righteous people that passed away already, welcome that righteous person. Go towards him and welcome him. And they come and say, Avo Shalom, come with peace. This is Gemara in Ketubot, close to 2,000 years ago. And the time a person died, he gets permission to see, and he sees relatives and his friends from the world, from the physical world, and he recognizes them. And they look exactly in the image that they live in this life. It's exactly what they describe is going, and the Jews. Now, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Believe me, they don't know Gemara. Mr. Smith from Texas never read this. But he described it exactly. All of them. Millions of them. And if he's righteous, they're very happy towards him. And they walk with him. The Gemara describes a story that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the president of Israel, in the destruction of the Second Temple. This is what it says. Moments before he closed his eyes, after he gave the blessing to his student, I wish you're going to fear God like you fear human being, that famous blessing that I always talk about. We wish to get to that level. This is what he said. Prepare a chair for the king Chizkiyahu, the king of Judah, that come to welcome me. That's his last sentence of his life. He already saw it. I have a guy in our yeshiva, and Ariel is with me here. He can back me up on that story. I don't know if you heard the story, but you know the guy, Yitzhak Bonan. I say his name is a Bukharian guy from Brooklyn. He's in our yeshiva over here by now. I used to teach him Gemara. A few months ago, he told me how his father passed away. They were living in one floor in a building, and his father was sleeping in bed, sick, in the bed, in the house. And then his father one day opened his eyes, and he told him, oh, the poor neighbor, she just died. And they thought he's hallucinating, you know. He was sick in bed. A week later only, they found out that the moment he said that, exactly she passed away. He saw her soul flying in the air. When a person is in the last days of his life, their soul is slowly, slowly leaves the body. Sometimes it's a situation that you have in and half out. You already see things around. A week later, they found out that his father was actually telling them about the neighbor. In a hospital, this is a very common thing, and doctors can tell you this, that the people in the last moments of their lives, some of them already speaking about all kinds of people that they saw before they died. This is other people that die in a hospital. They already see their spirit started to go up. We cannot see it because we're still in Baruch Hashem. They're already halfway out, so they see it. It's interesting. This is what happened here. Look. He says, prepare a chair, it's the king. King Chizkiyahu, the most righteous king ever lived in history. The biggest one ever lived. Chizkiyahu.
time of the first Beit HaMikdash, nobody was righteous like him. All the Jews in this generation, 8-6, were 100% perfect rabbis, each one of them, 8-6. They knew all the Torah, thanks to him. And he is the one who came to welcome Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the president of the destruction of the second temple. Interesting. The king in the time of the first temple came to visit the king in the time of the second temple, even though he wasn't officially a king because there was no kings anymore. But he was the president, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and that's it. When a person passed away, all his actions and moments of his life are revealed to him. And this is what he's been told. This is what you did in that day. Do you agree? And he say, yes, yes. Where is it? The Midrash about Parashat Ha'azinu, close to 2,000 years ago. Kevan sheba adam lipater min ha'olam. When a person is about to leave the physical world, God comes to him and told him, and tell him, sign of everything you did, because you're going to die for the way you live. And he writes, and he signs. Yalkut Shimoni, close to 1800 years ago. You should always remember what above you. There's an eye that watch, and a ear that listens, and every step you make is registered in a book of God. Nowhere in the world you're going to be able to hide one sin or one bad word that you said in your life. One lie, one penny that you stole. Everything will be open. There will be public information. And where are you going to hide yourself? That's the question, from the embarrassment. Right now you accumulate. Nobody watch. Rabbi, some people come, they tell you stories, they think you're a fool, you were born yesterday, yeah, this and that. From the story you see, he contradicts himself 50 times already. You see the liar, you see the thief, you see the robber, you see everything from his story, because he doesn't even know how to lie. And they think they're fooling you, they're fooling him. You can fool everyone, you can fool him. Everything you say in front of the dead body, he knows until you cover the grave with sand. There's another opinion that even when he's covered with a sand, he's able to hear until the worms finish to eat all the body. Yes, and the Zohar says every bite the worm takes from the body, the soul feels it. Every worm, every bite. That's why the Zohar says, and it's in the book of Reshit Chochmah, that a person before he passed away, if he's smart, he won't be heavy. And it's not a joke. You don't want to be very fat or heavy when you die. Why? Because it takes longer until the worm finishes. So maybe God have mercy on you. He sent a lot of worms from across the street, you know, to come also. You know? Anyway, come on. Let's be serious. Now is another Gemara. Pay attention. This is 2,000 years ago. Everything I show you, not from today. And the time, Amar Rav leRav Shmuel Bar Shilat. Rav, it was his name, Rav. He told his friend in the yeshiva, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat. Pay attention. He said, when I die, my request from you is, make me a great eulogy. Eulogy means a speech. Say all the good things I did in my life. Why? Because I will stand above you and listen to everything you say. We don't need Dr. Raymond Moody and all his friends from Virginia University. Believe me, the Torah is the Torah before Virginia College. Yeah. Word by word, no test, no internet, no scientific, no interview, no visit to the hospital every hour. One sentence in the Torah, finished. I'm going to stand above you. How did he know? He didn't have the internet to check life after death, Dr. Raymond. He didn't know that. You see, where the knowledge come from? Rambam, pay attention to the language of Maimonides. 850 years ago. Torah, the Holy Torah order us. You should not have among you any person who communicate with the dead in all kinds of ways, such as Shoel Ov, Yadoni, Vedoresh El Ametim. This is what it says. Ov and Yadoni, the Rambam explained, is a way to communicate with the dead by doing all kinds of tricks. And someone who asks questions from the dead is a person who fasts and goes into the cemetery and sleeps there that he gets impurity spirit. And this is the word of the language of the Rambam in Ilchot Avodah Zarah. This is the rule.
Everyone who does any kind of trick that the dead will come and inform him about something will be punished by the Torah. Shenemar such and such. This is what the Torah orders. God forbid, the Rambam writes, for a Jewish person, a holy Jew, ever to experiment such thing by communicating with the dead people. And everything that we are going to show you here, it was experiment by Goim, the non-Jews. And they did it. And they proved to us that there's ways to communicate with the dead. And so forth. Now pay attention. Now the lecture really begins. That was now the introduction. From now on, no more cigarettes for the next 20 minutes and we'll finish. But please, because now it's real stories from life. Medium. What is a medium? We spoke before. People who sit with the broker and the broker communicate with dead people. Trance. That's what we call trance. The most famous trance that we know is Mrs. Leonora Pfeiffer and another Goya. Her name is Eileen Gart. And this is some of the experiments that the scientists did with those two ladies. Mrs. Leonora Pfeiffer lives in Boston, Massachusetts. She is able to get into trance in a very high quality of trance. And she started to become very famous in a spiritual parapsychologist with her test. And some of her customers were able to communicate with their relatives. And she was checked for 40 years by 7 different committees that went and investigated her, private detectives recording her, following, checking, crossing information to make sure that she is not making anything up. And they all came, I'm making it short, they all came to one conclusion. There's not even 1% chance that she make up one thing. Why? Because she was able in each way of the communication to give information to the person who asked that only he and the deceased person knew. Private information. Let's say one of you came and told me a secret now. Only us know that. You and me. That's it. And one day, Chas v'Shalom, one of us passed away and the other one wants to communicate. And you come to Mr. and Mrs. Pfeiffer, whatever, in Boston, and you want to call that person. And then that secret that we only know, all of a sudden she say, you say, remember that you told me that secret and this and this and that. She has no way to know. And they made tests over 40 years and they couldn't believe, how can it be? She's giving information from dead people. And finally, they came to a conclusion. There was a person that refused to believe. He was fighting and fighting and fighting, and in the end, he admitted. He said, even the biggest doubt, the person with the biggest doubt has to surrender to this woman. She has, there's no doubt. She sees and she passed information from the images of the dead people. His name was Richard Hodgson. There was lots of doubt. He didn't believe in life after life. He brought his students. In the end, they all were embarrassed when they checked all the experiments that they was done with her. They came to only one conclusion. There's no way to contradict. I have to skip some because I want to get to the other things. But in the way that she was doing the trance, right, first of all, they put her in a room. They didn't let her listen to the media, no newspaper, nothing. And they brought a person that she doesn't know. And they were even changing names. They were testing her, cheating her, lying to her, bringing somebody with different names to see if it's going to work or not. All kinds of tests. And all the tests, she passed away without one problem. And in the end, people that were communicating with the relatives, in the time that she was giving the information, things were happening to her. All of a sudden, she shrinks, her body, she moves, all kinds of weird things. And they describe it, how what happened to her when she was giving information. And this is his report. She mentioned a friend from my childhood. She mentioning his name. She said, remember that you used to go together to school? He's jumping like a frog and laughing. He say, I used to jump better than you. You remember how I suffered before I died? You came to visit me in you didn't come to visit me in the hospital. You didn't bother to come to visit me in the hospital. That's what he tells me now. All this information was correct. And then, of course, with all the other information that he checked,
he came to the conclusion that he's seeing a case with potential that no other has. And in 1892, remember this is very old, all these things. In 1892, in the middle of a seance with Eileen Gard, with Pfeiffer, I'm sorry, George Folio was a friend, a philosopher, a friend of the investigator. He came himself to test her. And as he started to talk to her, after that, he brought 150 people to participate in that seance. 30 from them, they knew George Folio before he died. And each one of the 30 people from the 150 people in the audience, he addressed him as she was there closing her eyes, and she said, I have a message for John Smith. He tells you, remember that you gave him a $100 bill in that day next to the deli over there? And then I said, yes. And then she said, I have a message for Moshe Levy. You remember he stole from you $2? And you cry until today for those $2? Don't worry, he gave it back. He put it in your pocket. Whatever. You got the point? 30 people in the audience. He started to address them through her. Each one of them got up and said, it happened. Information. Then, another case that happened with her. And this is what happened. There was a person that his name, it was Oliver Lodge. And this is the story. I have an uncle in London. They have a family and all that. The uncle has a brother, a twin brother, that died 20 years ago. I started to write to him about these things, the experiences that we had with Eileen Dart. And I asked him to send me some kind of object that belongs to his brother. A few days later, I received a gold watch that his deceased brother used to like very much. That morning, nobody saw the watch in my pocket or heard anything about it. I gave the watch to Mrs. Pfeiffer, and she was in the middle of a spiritual trance, and she told me right away, this belonged to your uncle that loved Uncle Robert. And the watch right now is in a position of Robert. And the brother wants to communicate with him. And then after a few seconds, she was thinking about the name. She said, Jerry. That's the name of the deceased person that owned the watch. Jerry. And this is what she started to say. This is my watch. Robert is my brother. I'm here. I'm Uncle Jerry. And this is my watch. It was right above her and we're able to communicate. In one of the, with a different person, different medium, in the middle of a trance, all of a sudden, there's another way to do it. You hold a pen, if you're the trance, you have sleep, and you hold the pen. And after a few minutes, the pen begins to write. But it doesn't write like this. You hold it from here, and it begins to move. The soul starts to move it, and it starts to write things, like this. And then, in one of the seance, she was writing, how do you call this tavim, that mean music, when you want to play piano, you have to look at that and tell you how to play. Tune? Note. Musical notes? Musical notes. She started to write musical notes of the most famous music artists that lived. Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, Brahms, Chopin, Rachmaninoff, it wasn't Bukharian, because it's Rachmaninoff. Bukharian is Rachmaninoff, this is Rachmaninoff. That alone makes him a goy. Anyway, she has no idea about music, and she was able to write musical notes of these famous people. As she was writing, communicate, each one of them came and moved her finger and write the actual musical notes of the most famous classical music. Emma Conti, Italian Goya, also has the ability to have trance and communicate with death. She started to write songs of the songwriter named Emily Dickinson. She won 46 awards about her, the songs that she wrote.
even though she never went to school for high school even one day of her life. She was able to write songs and win them. Why? Because the deceased person was actually telling her what music to write. It wasn't her music. She never went to learn music. And one of the communications, this is what happened. Pay attention. Mrs. Eileen Gart, she started to talk and they recorded her. And this is what she started to say. R101. There's an airship, British airship. It's called R101. On the 5th day of October 1930, pay attention to this story, it's shocking. The first air boat went up to the sky. It belongs to the British Air Force. Moments after the takeoff, it exploded. And all the people above on that died, all of them. That morning, Mrs. Eileen Gart, famous medium, she wanted to communicate with the spirit of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle that wrote the book Sherlock Holmes. You know Sherlock Holmes?
Yes.
She's the author of that book. She wanted to communicate. And instead of Sir Arthur Conan, who came to the seance, to the medium, the voice of a pilot named Erwin, he comes to the medium, and he started to describe the destruction of that spaceship. The engine was too heavy. The oil pipe explodes. The angle of the flight was too low. The cover got a lot of water, which made the boat even heavier. They had a middle room into the boat, which made it very heavy. I couldn't take off. He was describing exactly the reason for the destruction. Nobody at that moment in the world knew that spaceship is about to explode. It was right moments after it happened. He came to the connection to the strand and described as it exploded. And only hours later, remember, it wasn't like today. In a minute in CNN, you see it all over the world. We are talking 1930 here. Only hours later, the world knew about the explosion. But yet the person who already died there came to her trance and gave her the information how it exploded. This is in 1930. Then later, the investigators, the engineers, they wrote the report exactly what he said. In the report, they investigated the crash, and this is it. Reincarnation. We know that the soul is eternal. The soul never dies. And the body is only a bat. And this is now some information about reincarnation. Pay attention. Rabbi Chaim Vital, 500 years ago, with the Ari HaKadosh in Tzfat, this is what he says. Sometimes I was walking with my rabbi in a field. The Ari HaKadosh, one of the biggest Kabbalists in history, if not the greatest one. And this is what he says. I was walking with my Rebbe in a field, and he used to point and rax and tell me, you see, this is that person that used to be a righteous person and a Talmid Chacham, but because of one specific sin that he made in his life, he is reincarnated in that rock, or in that plant, or in that flower. And even some of them, my Rebbe, the Arizal, did not know personally, but he was able to tell me the name of that person that there. And then later I went and investigated if there was a person like this, and I found that everything he told me really happened, and this is the way he died, and so forth and so on. And he says, if I'm going to write all the things I heard from him, I can fit it in a book. That's how many cases I had with him. Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Modena, hundreds of years ago in Italy, in Venezia. He was a rabbi and a doctor in Venezia. In the beginning, he had doubts about reincarnation. He did not believe in it. Until something that happened close to the end of his life. And it's written in a book of Rabbi Azulay the Chida 300 years ago, a huge Kabbalist in Morocco. He wrote it in his book, that story, and this is what happened. His neighbor gave birth to a boy. A month after the birth, the boy became very sick. After 6 months of life, he was about to die any second, moments before his death. And the neighbor called the rabbi to come to her house and read Tehillim and Divrei Torah, as we know that this is what the Jews does before a person passed away. And he saw the boy shrinking and feeling very bad, and he started to read parts of Tehillim, and the boy, 6 months old, opened his eyes and said, Shema Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. 6 months old. And right when he said Echad, his soul left the body and he died. He wrote it in his book. And this is a wonder. From that moment on, not only he believed in reincarnation, he saw in his eyes that there are people being reincarnated in bodies. In Portugal, also a few hundred years ago, the king was about, nobody knew it, they had to rebel against the king, and a new king will be the king. One boy, kid, baby, screamed, Viva such and such, the name of a person, the new king of Portugal. A few days after, there was a revolution, and that person became the king. A boy, little baby. There's incidents in the world, and they're all registered in books in the past 1,000 years, that kids were able to talk. Not only kids, some parts, even animals, were saying things like human beings. And this is the mystery, because we have no understanding how is it possible, but we see every rule has an exception to the rule. I'm going to show you a movie that you'll never forget, for those who didn't see it. It's worth to wait for it. In the time of Shimshon, the hero, Shimshon, Samson and Delilah. You know the story? I'm sure you watched the movie. So Samson and Delilah, this is what, pay attention what it says, the Arizal about Samson, which you never knew. And this is what it says. Vayishlach Hashem et Yerubal ve'et Badan. Who's Badan? Badan is a different name for Samson. Why his name is Badan? His name wasn't Badan, his name was Samson. The Gemara, this is what the Arizal says. The secret in this story with Samson is that Samson is a reincarnation of Nadav ben Aaron, the son of Aaron, the Kohen, Nadav. And his name is Badan. Badan is Nun, Bet, Dalet. Nun, Dalet, Bet. If you look at that from the opposite direction, Nadav. Badan is Nadav. Why all of a sudden his name one time called Badan? His name was Samson. Why? Because he was a reincarnation of the son of Aaron, which his name was Nadav. You know, Nadav and Avihu, the two sons of Aaron that died. The fire came and burned them. So why Nadav had to be reincarnated and he came back as a person called Shimshon, Samson the prophet? Why? Because when he was alive, the son of Aaron, he said, the Jewish women are not decent enough for me and you. That's what he told his brother. We don't have a Jewish woman in our level that we can marry her. We can marry them. And that's why, because of that, pay attention to the judgment here. Hashem put him back to life, reincarnation at Samson. And what was his test? He saw the Jewish girl as the same thing. It's a repeat of another test, another chance. And he went after this Philistine woman, Delilah, not Jewish. And what was his punishment? That she puts him in jail and blinded him. And why? What happened when he was in the last day of his life? What happened? He still had, you know, the strength was in his hair. They cut his hair. In the last minute, he prayed to Hashem. He said, my soul will die with these Philistines. And he killed thousands of them. He broke the poles, and they all collapsed in a stadium, and he died with them. And how did she reveal the secret that his power is in his hair? She made him drink wine. And once he drank the wine, the Gemara said, Nichnas Yain Yatsa Sod. The wine goes in, the secret comes out. That's what the Gemara said. Why wine? What was the sin of Nadav, the son of Aaron, that God killed him? He entered into the Beit HaMikdash drunk. That's what he says, נכנסו ליד, the same story, repeat again in a different body. Samson, the son of Aaron. People don't know when you don't know. And that's why Samson, what was his correction to his life? That he became a Nazir. You know what a Nazir means? What a Nazir means? Who knows? Nazir, first thing, first rule applies to him, he doesn't touch wine. No raisin, no grapes, no, not even the seeds of the grapes. Why? Because in his previous life, what caused him to die? The wine. In this life, I'm a Nazir, I don't touch wine. You understand? And this is what the Arizal told him. Without the Arizal, the Ari HaKadosh, we would never know. Let's see one proof for life of for reincarnation. Reincarnation. They were checking kids 2.5 years old to 4. Not more than that. But they're not tricky enough to make tricks. Little kids. And after they checked them, Dr. Ian Stevenson has a flood of scientific evidence that leaves no doubt. There's no question that people are being reincarnated in different bodies. No doubt whatsoever. How? This is what he says. Indica Gonretana from Sri Lanka. It's near India there. Was born in 1962. Pay attention what happened with this Indian guy. And he remembered his previous life. There are people, even in Israel, there's few like this. In a small country like Israel, there's few like this. Remember their previous life in detail, not in hypnosis. They come and talk to you, and he can tell you that I lived in that country, and I used to own this car, and I used to have this business, and he talks about it like it's his life. But he was in a different body. Well, I'm going to show you a movie about it. The Mikre of Indica Gonreta was born in Sri Lanka in 1962. It's very typical to reincarnation and previous life. Stevenson started to investigate that case in 1968, 6 years after he was born, and he published his conclusion in a newspaper, ASPR, in 1974. That means he checked that for 6 years until he published an article about it. Indica started to talk when he was 2 years old. A year after, he started to describe his previous life as a very wealthy person from the city Matra, that is right on the southern beach of Sri Lanka. He describes his beautiful mansion, his Mercedes car, his other mansions, the elephants that he used to have in his garden. And he had a servant, his name is Parmagaza, that used to be his personal driver. 3 years old kid, speaking now. I have a driver, I have a Mercedes. Imagine your son begins to talk. It happened. The father of Indica started to listen to the stories of his son, and he said, what's going on? What is this, all these stories this kid's making? Where can he get Mercedes information? He doesn't know about those things or anything. He was curious, what's going on? So he started to investigate. He went to that place and checked that there was a very wealthy person that lived in Matra that describes, that fit exactly the description of his son's story. But the father, after a while, got tired of his investigation and left it alone. And one day he gave it to Dr. Stevenson, and he continued from there. And Dr. Stevenson went to India and to Sri Lanka, and he started to check all the details that the boy say, and he went to his house. And that Indica fed the life of a businessman that used to sell trees, very wealthy, and his name was Verizinga in his previous life. He owned elephants, he lived in Matra, and he died in 1960. 2 years later, he was reincarnated in a new body. 2 years he was up there, and 2 years later, he came back in a new body. Now pay attention. His house was next to the train station, and the servant, Parmadaza, was still alive. The servant from the previous life, it's only 8 years old now, he's still alive, he's older.
The mansion is there, the elephant, everything is there. I'm not sure about the Mercedes, but it's still there. Shanti. Shanti, another Indian. She was born in Delhi, in India. In 1926, she was 3 years old, she started to tell her parents about what's going on in Mothra. And she said, my husband, his name is Kaider Nath. She's 3 years old, she has a husband already. She said, I died in the 10 day after I gave birth to my son, I died. In the beginning, her parents ignored their story. And then when she was 9 years old, she started to talk non-stop about her previous life with details. The parents started to investigate. They sent someone to the city of Mothra, and they found that the husband, Kaider Nath, is still alive. So they wrote him a letter, and they said that their daughter hallucinating, and she mentioned that she's his wife from previous life. Kaider Nath was impressed by the story, and he decided to check the girl. Surprisingly, he arrived to Delhi. The parents didn't know about his arrival. All of a sudden, he knocked on the door. As soon as the door was open, she said, Kaider! 3 years old, she remembered her husband from previous life. Every personal question he asked her, she knew to answer. 3 years old. She knew all the food she used to make for him, what he used to like and what he didn't like. And she said, you're a cheater. You got remarried. You promised me you'd never marry a second woman. Didn't we make a deal that you'll never get remarried after me if I die? And he was embarrassed. And he admitted. He said, yes. Yes, I made a deal with you. And then they brought a newspaper owner in India, a famous lawyer and a big businessman, to follow this group and go with Shanti to the city of Mothra and to see how she behaves in her city that she claimed that she was living in her previous life. And as soon as they arrived in a train station, they were trying to fool her around, take her left, right, confuse her on the street. But she knew everything. We're talking 3 years old kids. She said, no, that's my way to the house. And then all of a sudden in a crowd, she recognized her brother-in-law. Gita! She screamed, that's my husband's brother, was standing in between all the people. And they rented a carriage, and they took her, and she explained him how to go to the house. As soon as they got to the house, even though the house was renovated a lot, she recognized right away the address. And she went inside the house, and she knew all the doors, all the rooms, everything. She described the furniture, where she got it, and where, and how much, and this and that. And then when she came to one of the rooms, there was a closet over there. In a corner of a room, she stopped and said, oh, right here under the ground, I hide money. Under the ground. They started to dig. They dig. She said, it's there, I'm telling you. They dig, but they can't find the money. Then she looks at her husband, she says, where is the money, Kaider? He says, I'm so embarrassed. I had to take the money. He says, 1961, Dr. Stevenson says, I interview all the people connected to that story, Kaider, Shanti, the parents, all the family, and I came to a conclusion. I have 24 proofs in this story that leaves no doubt that this girl is the wife that she claimed from the previous life. No way in the world she was able to do it. An Arab Druzi in Israel, in the Israeli army, this is what he described. This is from Israel. From Osfia. Osfia is in Israel. I was about to throw a grenade in Golani. Golani is the big fighters, you know. I see someone move his head. We have a Golan chick here. So, I was about to throw a grenade and I felt a weird feeling. All of a sudden I had a deja vu that I died from an explosion from a grenade. I got scared. I couldn't throw the grenade. But I can't explain why. Until age 10, I remember my death. Bader, that's his name, this Arab. Then I forgot. And then when I got to the army, it all came back to me. I didn't die as a soldier. I actually die as a regular citizen in Mount Carmel. The army, Tzal, the Israeli army, used to train over there. And I was a little shepherd over there, 18 years old, before I joined the army in my previous life. And then I found a grenade that the army left in the field. I opened it up, and it exploded in my face. It was on August 14, 1958, I remember the date. That day, a baby was born by the next village, right next village. And his name is Bader. Bader is 33 years old in his new life. He's working in a factory in Haifa, in the port of Haifa. And he is a soldier in the Israeli reserve. I was a kid. I started to talk and I started to feel it's not my house. I knew that I have a different mother. I wanted to go meet her. Then I told my parents I used to be a shepherd. I used to fight with a manager in a school, and one day I threw a stone in his head, and they kicked me out of school. And I used to have a flute that I used to play music. And I had a dog, his name is Barod. And I told him how my sister caught me in the bathroom smoking. And she told my father, and I told him how I exploded with a grenade. And I want to go visit my father and my sister from previous life. This is what he said. They took him to the family, and he recognized the house, and he knew to give them direction how to go there. And even show them where he hid the flute from previous life. And so forth and so on, the story begin and continue. And there's another story from Brazil in Sao Paulo. In some of these cases are amazing because they're able to even investigate murder cases. Some people were able to say who killed them, who actually killed them. But that's mainly in hypnosis. Now, the last thing before we finish and I show you the movie is regression. That's the best part. Pay attention. Regression is you go to a parapsychology and he hypnotizes you and he's able to take you back to your previous life sometime. That's returning you in age. Back. In many cases, we are able, this I'm reading from here, from the screen, we are able to lower the age even before birth. And a person is speaking in a different language at a different age in previous life. Let's see some of the examples. In 1973, a famous doctor in Philadelphia was working with his wife in hypnosis and regression. After he hypnotized his wife, she started to talk like a man in a language that later was recognized as an old Swedish. And he spoke to her, and the expert that they found that understand the language were able to speak to her in a language that does not exist in the world today. And she described herself as a man, a farmer in Sweden, 300 years ago, in a village called Henshain. And she recognized the village and the market and all kinds of things that we don't even have in the world today, all kinds of tools. William McDougall, a psychologist from Harvard University, in the beginning of the 120th century, McDougall was not interested in reincarnations at all. He was an expert in hypnosis. And the first time he found that, when he made an experiment in Oxford, and he was checking trance, in the middle of the experiment, all of a sudden the person was informing that he's an Egyptian carpenter in the time of King Pharaoh, 3,400 years ago. Speaking to a person in our life, and he tells you, I'm a carpenter that builds something for Paro. Listen to this story now. And he says, I'm creating right now an eagle. He describes how he makes an eagle from a wood, and he makes him a crown. 9 months later, Sir Petri, archaeologist, a British archaeologist that was working to find things in Egypt, he said that he found some new discoveries
And what did he found, believe it or not, is that eagle. That person was describing that he made, they found that eagle. The eagle is in a museum in Europe, and now we know who made it. We know his name. There's a description of a person that was a Jew in 1890, 800 years ago, almost the time of Rambam, Maimonides. And he said how the Goy made the Jews so bad. And they used to break into their houses and murder everyone coolly. And then he's describing that all the Jewish community in York, in England, were all destroyed. And she says, this woman, that she and her children were hiding in the basement of a church. But then later they found them and murdered them inside the church. And this is the description of about 800 years ago. And today this church is still existing. And they even renovated the church. And when they renovated the church, they found that the church had actually a basement that no one knew about. Under the foundation, they had a basement. Amazing. There are people that are speaking in languages from 1,000 years ago that nobody knows again. They need experts to understand what they say. There's a person that speaks in a time before the Torah was given, in the time of Avraham Avinu, Aram Naharaim. That's where the father of Avraham and all these people come. He speaks about this time, 3,800 years ago. I wonder if they want to make a regression to someone who was Adam. What's going to happen? So, 9,000 people in England was going back to the previous life in regression. Here, another Italian woman, and so forth and so on. The book, the last thing that I told you from the five, it means another soul entering the body and there's nothing you can do about it. Now there are two people living in one body. And I'm going to read only one page from that. It's enough. I know it's long. We made it on time because I stay up to 11:30. Baruch Hashem, with the movie, we'll make it. It's very similar to reincarnation. It's just different that there are two souls in one body. And this is what it is. This is a story. In a month of Tevet, Shnat Shla, when I was in Ferrara in Italy, I went to visit a girl 25 years old with lots of ministers and important people, and I found her laying on a bed. Her body was like a body without a soul. Her eyes were closed and her mouth was open. Her tongue was very, very thick. And the people around her in the house were saying, Rabbi, there is a spirit inside her that speaks. I was begging that person to answer my question, and he answered me in Italian. I knew, I recognized the language. He said that his name is Battista de Modena, that he was hung because he robbed all kinds of places. They hung him. Today they give him reward. They make him a Chaver Knesset. They put him in a government if they find you steal a lot. And the old days, they used to hang people. As all of a sudden he started to cry and make all kinds of noises from her throat. This is a 25 years old girl laying on a bed. She's sleeping and he speaks from her throat. As her eyes is closed. He's taking control on her throat and speaks. He's starting to cry. And we see the throat of the woman become thicker and thicker. And the woman moves with pains. And we hear all her body is moving. And we have terrible mercy on this woman. It's hard to see. Even Dr. Stevenson in 1973 had a case like this. And he's describing a woman, another person that entered another body and speaking from inside with a different name that lives in the 19th century. Even somebody like this entered the body. It's hard to believe. Dr. Mitchell, a doctor from Philadelphia, this is what he says. In the middle of the night, he hears a ring. The bell is ringing. And he sees a little girl with clothes. And she says, Doctor, my mother is very sick. Can you come help her? It's snowing outside, snowstorm. The doctor was very tired. And he wanted to get rid of this girl, but he had mercy on her. And he say, okay, let me get dressed and I follow you. And he went, he followed the girl and he got into the house and he saw the mother she's having infection in her lung and he was able to save her. And after, he told the mother, how clever is your girl that she knew how to call me and knock on my door? How did she know I'm a doctor? So the mother told her, but doctor, my daughter died a month ago. She was crying. And Dr. Mitchell was shocked. And when he opened the drawer, he found all the clothes that the girl was wearing when she came to call him. And they were completely dry. And he was asking himself, how can it be? She just came soaking wet with this kind of clothes. This is the clothes she was wearing on her desk. The mother opened the drawer and showed him. Another case like this. Professor James Hislop, 1911, a case in 1911. Rosa Stone from Portland. She started to say that her deceased son is coming to visit in her house. In 1907, he was an officer in Annapolis and he committed suicide after a big fight with his friend. His spirit started to appear again and again. And he described how he was brutally murdered by the other officers. He wasn't really committing suicide. And he said exactly how they killed him. And they reopened his grave and they took the body out of the grave and the investigators say definitely it was murder, not suicide. Wow, this is a shocking story. Pay attention to this. In 1927, this is the case, in North Carolina, James Chapin, he died in 1921. In his will, he wrote that the mansion has to go to his son, Marshall, and his wife and their three children. And everybody else stayed with nothing. He gave them nothing. The will was signed and was written and signed with two witnesses in 1905. But in 1925, 20 years later, 4 years after he died, and 20 years after he wrote the will with the lawyer, 4 years after his death, his spirit started to come and visit one of his other sons, coming with an old coat that he used to wear in his life. And a second appearance, he told him, go and find my real will in the pocket of my coat. He is in the house of your brother there and here and there. Inside the pocket, there was something sewed. They ripped it, and they found a note inside. Read chapter 27 in Genesis in the old Bible of my father. The Bible was checked with witnesses, and they found the will over there. That was written in 1919. It was dividing the mansion equally in between all the sons of Chapin. They brought it to court, and the court reopened the case and were sharing it equally to all the brothers. Nobody resisted that case. It was so clear that even the guy that got all of it, I have no objection. Mr. Romer Traxal, he lived in Pennsylvania. He arrived to Portage, Indiana to receive the body of his son Charlie that was murdered. The body was found in the side of the road with no identification. The son, the voice of the murdered boy started to appear and come to Mr. Traxal from the minute him and his wife arrived to the town. And he told the police people that the voice whispering in his ear told him to go to the place where the murderer lives. And he came, and while he was driving on the street, he was looking for the son that of his, the car of his son that was stolen. The voice were telling him where to drive, and he found the car. I made a U-turn. I followed that car. I wanted to hit the car badly, but Charlie told me, be careful, don't do it. Just follow it. Until the driver parked the car and came out of the car. Then the man came and blamed him for stealing the car while another person is calling the police and he was holding him. The police came and arrested the driver. Charlie left me after we found the murderer. The police in court testified that not only that the murderer admitted, he went and explained how he murdered him and where was the body and everything. Finally, they found the body. Without this, they wouldn't find the body because the body was hiding somewhere. A woman in Long Island, right here, age 70, got blinded at age 18. She described her life with details in colors and everything. I'm skipping a lot. We're coming to an end, the last minute of this lecture, and I'm going to show you some spiritual picture, picture that were taken by a camera, and you know the camera working in a different way of the eye of a human being, and what we cannot see in a space, the camera can see it. This part not recommended for pregnant women or people with heart, with weak heart, please. You have to leave, leave now. It's not my responsibility. The next minute. I always like to keep the good for the best, you know, for the best for the end. Now, you're going to see people that were taking regular pictures and the camera was catching images, spiritual images in the background. This is all authentic pictures that were checked by laboratories, that they didn't do all kinds of tricks in Photoshop and things like this, and they got certificate. Obviously, everyone can claim and make all kinds of things. This is a very famous picture in Auschwitz. For those who went to Germany, they made it like a museum. There's a line of bathrooms. As you can see right here, is a bathroom. And someone wanted to take a picture over there when there's nobody in the air. And they just found a picture of a boy or a girl. Do you see a face here? This is the nose, this is the eyes, this is the mouth. This is a picture of a bathroom, and the camera was taking an image of a Jewish boy or a girl. And this is, if you stand over there, you don't see it, but the camera able to see it. The lens of the camera. Now, the captain of this team was taking as the last mission of this group. And as they took the picture, they found the face of their friend that died a few days earlier. As he went into a propeller of a plane and it hit him in the head and killed him. He didn't want to miss the picture. And as they took the picture right there, you see here? He came behind all of them and took the picture with them, the spirit of that person. This is bigger, as you can see. This is this man. See? This is him. And right behind him, right here, this is the friend. You see his face? The mouth, the nose, the eyes. This is the face of the friend that died a few days earlier. Another picture in November 1995, the house was burned completely in a apartment building in the United States. Tony Horhill is a picture that took He is a photographer that took a picture right here, and as he was taking the picture of a building, they saw a spirit of a girl inside. There was nothing there. The building is going on fire. He took a picture, and when they developed it, they saw a face of a girl there. This girl, she was recognized as a young girl in 1977. They found that they recognized the girl. They know who the girl is. I don't want to lose too much time because I want to show you all of this. This is a family picture that was taken right by the picture. There's an image of a boy
You see that? That's a regular picture, but right here there's a face. Look. Face of a boy. An image of a spirit. This is a family picture in the 19th century, and the granddaughter that passed 6 months earlier, she participated in a picture right here by the wall. You see? Right here. And this is bigger. Right here. They took a picture and someone recognized her. In my opinion, there's two more faces here. One here and one here. I don't know why they're not saying anything about it. You see that? There's another face here. Look. There's few faces here. There's few people came to the picture. Yeah. Another picture. This picture, you see an image right above it? Tracy. She was born in June 13, 1975, Friday the 13th. And this is a picture, and we don't have time to read the whole thing. You got the point. This is another image that was found. Nobody knows what it is. This is another picture that we're taking. You see a face of a woman right behind? Right here. Her eyes, half of it. Not the whole thing gets into the camera. This is another picture of a woman, somebody standing right there. I hope you sleep well at night. This is another picture of a goy playing with his daughter. And right here, there's a girl sitting right there on a shelf, on a table. I don't think it's on a table. Right there. Okay, now I'm going to show you a picture. In 1985, there was a forest. And there were a lot of witches over there in that town. And then witches, they used to kill them when they caught them that they were doing all kinds of magic. So they took many, many witches into the forest and assassinate them. Let's see if you're able to see all these witches in the background of this picture inside the fire. I want everyone to know and to see. Well, that was only a trick. Thank you very much for coming. Let's watch the movie. Let's watch it. Usually it's much louder when it's with speakers. That's why I say it. All right, now let me show you a great movie. Yes.